coming to you live from the dentist chair. I'm Johannes Stauffer, and with me as always are the tortured screams of a thousand damned souls. And this is the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Episode 12.3, The Mildly Alarming Pod Cat?
Well, welcome back to the Mildly Alarming Podcast, everybody. So glad we could have you here listening to us talk about stuff. I'm Tom Rich.
And I'm Johannes Stauffer.
Hi, and I'm Chip Bove.
Good Lord, we have got to lock that door. Welcome back, Chip.
Keep wandering in.
Well, you know, I was going to knock, but it was slightly ajar, so I figured I would just come in and make myself at home.
Plus, we would have then had to edit a knock out of the track, and then by we, I mean me.
Right. I don't provide value to the show.
But we're very excited. We have Chip back on the program. We call it a program because we're in our late 70s, and it is the late 70s. But Chip, we were talking to him on Twitter the other day, and he has. We want to just jump right into it. Do we have any stupid jokes to cover?
No, I've got nothing.
Chip messaged me on Twitter about something called Creator Appreciation Day, which I'm hoping I'm on your website, is at creatorappreciationday.wordpress.com.
That's correct.
Nailed it.
Yes. So the idea behind Creator Appreciation Day is that there are a lot of wonderful things that are out there, such as podcasts and music and books, that we can all sort of consume, and usually for free. And one of the things that it's really a wonderful time with, you know, with the internet and everything, that the line between consumer and producer of all sorts of content has gotten really blurred. So it's very easy for everyday people to go and create things and make them available for a wide audience. One of the things that we often forget, though, is that there are people on both sides of that exchange. So often creators get very excited. They go and they create something and they put it out there. And even if there are people that are consuming it, like they could sort of see the download numbers, they don't often get feedback from those people. Occasionally, they might get a review, they might get someone to subscribe or leave a comment, but a lot of the time, creators put something out there just sort of into the void, and even though there are people on the other side that are enjoying the content, it's easy as a consumer to forget about the fact that there's another person on the other side, and to not really take the responsibility of letting the creator know how much you enjoy their work.
Yeah, I definitely find for myself it's much easier and I'm much more likely to leave a negative review for something, and not just free stuff, but anything that didn't go well, than something that I really liked. To think after listening to a great podcast or a great album or seeing a great film or, you know, having a great customer experience, to go back and say, this was really great, 5 stars, is much less frequent for me than being like, these people really did something I didn't appreciate, and I am going to let the world know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. There's much more of a drive to give negative feedback than to give positive feedback. So I decided, I got together with some friends, and we decided to create this, or set aside some time to actually appreciate the people that create the things that we love. And this has been a very easy message for me to get across to people, because when I say, okay, let's set aside some time to acknowledge or to recognize the people that create stuff that we really enjoy, that's a very easy message for people to get behind. Mm-hmm. So the charge of Creator Appreciation Day is sometime during the first weekend of March this year, 2016, you need to pick three things that you enjoy that were created by someone, and then let the creator of those things know how much you enjoy that thing. And then share these things with your friends so that your creators can amass even more fans. And the inverse of that, the converse of that, is to discover new creators by having your friends recommend them back to you. So those are sort of the four bullet points of Creator Appreciation Day.
That's really great. I think for me, the fourth will be the most difficult. I know very often people I love and respect send me a band to check out or a movie to watch. And while I know what they have to recommend to me is probably something I will like, because mm-hmm. they're people that know me well and we have similar interests, I never make the time to do it. My sister gave me an album several months ago, and she's like, I bought you this. And she doesn't buy people things. She's a making gift kind of thing. So for her to have spent money on something for me is kind of a big deal. And I still haven't. It's in the plastic wrap on my desk. I'm like, I'll get to it one day.
Yeah, it's surprising, because the feeling is often when you finally do get around to, to listening to the album that was given to you, or, you know, following up and looking at the video, or following someone on YouTube, you know, it's often something you really enjoy, and you're left with the thought, why didn't I do this earlier, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, then you start telling other people about it, and they're like, I told you about that 2 years ago.
The best is when you make the recommendation back to the original person who recommended it to you.
Yeah,
I have done that.
I'm pretty sure I've done that to you, too.
We've probably done it to one another. I told you about that.
No, but I told you about that before you told me about it. You know, and it definitely... It definitely makes a difference too if you make a thing and put a thing out there, and then somebody says something at all about it,
yeah.
Let alone something kind. I can remember I got a couple of short stories published in the most obscure online literary journal possible, which I don't think exists anymore, so they're gone forever.
That is pretty obscure.
And yeah, I know, right? And I'm pretty sure that no human being ever actually read them. And I would have just been on cloud nine if I'd gotten an email and I'd been like, hey, I liked your story and the thing.
Well, that's part of why we beg for iTunes reviews all the time for the podcast. Yeah. We have two iTunes reviews. We'll have been doing this for a year in March.
You realize that this whole segment is going to sound like us begging for more reviews, just making the case for, please just say.
Oh, no, we have a third person on.
Oh, right. So that makes it more legit. Yeah. Please say nice things about the Mildly Alarming Podcast. Chip asked you to.
But it cracks me up. Our two iTunes reviews are from my older brother and your wife.
Well, it is interesting because there are a number of different places that you can go based on what it is, the object that you're, the object in question. So, for example, if you're reviewing a board game, then you would want to go to BoardGameGeek.com or maybe Amazon if it's for sale there. And then if it's a podcast or a piece of music, you want to go to iTunes. And then on YouTube, obviously, you could go and subscribe to people's channels and leave comments on their videos. But there isn't sort of a single place that you can go to sort of to be able to leave feedback for all of these different things. So each system has its own take on what's going to be an easy experience to write a review. So what I've done, you mentioned the website earlier. If you go to creatorappreciationday.wordpress.com, you could see I've created how-to, very short, sort of 3 or 4 step how-to guides for leaving a review on one of these different systems. So if you're thinking, a lot of the barrier to entry is I've never left a review on iTunes before, or I've never rated a game on BoardGameGeek or something. So so what I've tried to do is I've tried to make it as easy as possible. Once you've decided that, yes, this is a creator of something that I enjoy, and yes, I want to let them know, That should be it. As soon as you make that decision, it should be very clear what the next steps are. So I've laid them all out for you. So you no longer have that as an excuse. So you could go to creatorappreciationday.wordpress.com and click on how to write a review for iTunes. And that will take you step by step through everything you need to do to leave a comment for this or any other podcast and make the day of that podcast creator.
That's awesome. Have you seen any feedback on last time we had Chip on? It was to talk about his then forthcoming, now out and played and enjoyed game, Smoke and Mirrors. Mm-hmm. Have you gotten any feedback on that since it came out a few months back?
I have. It has a number of ratings on BoardGameGeek.com, and I'm always happy to see more. It's interesting because it's as a bluffing game, it sort of has its own audience. Bluffing games are not for everyone. So one person gave it a low review, and they left a comment saying bluffing. So either they were bluffing and they really thought it was a great game. But other than that, I think reviews are excellent because they're really the intersection between the reviewer's personal tastes and the object that they're reviewing or the game that they're reviewing. But I will say specifically about Smoke and Mirrors, I'll tell this story that just happened today. I have a... There's a group of coworkers, and I play games with them on a at least a weekly basis. Sometimes we'll play, two or three times during the week. And so today we're playing Cunning Folk, which is another game in the Button Shy Wallet series. And this is designed by Jay Treat. So two of us had played it before, and the other two players were new to it. And it went over really, really well. It's an excellent deduction game, and everyone really enjoyed it. There were moments of, surprise and laughter, and everyone was a little bit hesitant to sort of, finish up. I think we probably said, okay, this is the last game, and then we have to go back to work. We probably said that like three or four times. before actually finishing up.
Nice.
And I thought, oh, this is great. I'll go back on Twitter and I'll let JTreat know that, hey, we really enjoyed playing your game. And that's kind of part of, that ties very neatly into Creator Appreciation Day. And so I go into Twitter and it has, while you were away, here are the tweets that you missed. And one of them, from just 2 minutes before I sat down at the computer, was Jay Treat saying, hey, Flying Sheep, I played Smoke and Mirrors today, and everyone loved it.
That's awesome.
And I thought, well, this is awkward. how can I now turn around and say, oh, yes, well, I just played your game and loved it? I mean, it's not even really believable at this point. So that was a really neat thing to know that, I'm sure that at the time that my group was playing Cunning Folk and enjoying it, his group was playing Smoke and Mirrors. So
that's awesome. It's a good point to make for the people on the other side of the transaction, the creators, that if you don't make yourself available, you're not going to be able to receive the positive negative or any feedback that you could get from the people who are consuming whatever it is that you're producing. I can't tell you the number of people we met at Protospiel last year who we asked, do you have a Twitter handle? Do you have Instagram? Do you have anything where we can find you and let you know, that we liked your game or keep up with what you're doing? And they're like, oh, I don't have anything like that. And it was kind of disappointing because I wanted to be able to say, hey, I was thinking about your game the other day and I thought of so-and-so, especially in a public forum like Twitter, where not only am I getting an idea across to them and letting them know that I really enjoyed what they did, but also in a way that lets other people see and opens new avenues for new people to find their game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for game design in particular, and also I think for writing, It's a very fruitful field because all these conversations are going on in public. And so you can, you know, there's a lot of really good brainstorming that could be done because you could be chatting with someone about whatever, a mechanism, a theme, and then someone else that who either follows you or follows the other person can see the conversation and follow along and say, oh, yeah, there was, you know, there was a game that came out in the 1980s by Mattel, and it, you know, it does this sort of thing that you're talking about. And that happens just all the time on Twitter. But one of the, you know, part of getting the feedback back to the creator is going to the place where the creator is listening.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, even though, you know, my first thought is BoardGameGeek.com for game designers and publishers. Certainly Amazon is another place, iTunes, YouTube as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know sort of for each creator, the place that they're looking for feedback might be different. So that's something to keep in mind.
Yeah. It's funny. I've been following a few other podcasts and some of them are fabulously, like, just so many followers. Like they go, they're stand up comics and people and they're
successful.
Successful, right? Yeah.
Use the word you want.
They're you're taking pot shots at one another and he's like, yeah, your podcast only has 50,000 listeners, and the other guy's like, you wound me, sir. And I'm like, 50,000 listeners, good lord. But they're at a point in their careers where they're like, oh, I don't look at the comments. I don't want my feelings hurt. But I really appreciate what you're doing, because for those of us mortals who don't have Netflix specials and whatever else.
See, I don't look at the comments because I don't want my feelings hurt, but for a very different reason.
You don't want to go back every day to the comment section to find zero comments.
Yeah, pretty much. You go to our website and you look at the comment section. It's like, last posted 7 months ago.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that there's that, and that's definitely part of the overall switch from having a very small restricted set of broadcasters, right? So, you know, back when there are only like three main television stations and, you know, and radio and everything. And, you know, in order to be able to have a message, in order to be able to send your message out to people, you know, there were a lot of barriers to entry. So you had to have, you know, capital and equipment and you had to know how to do things. Whereas today, being able to create a website, being able to create a podcast, being able to create a print and play board game, you know, all of these things, we have a tremendous amount of resources available to us. So collectively, there are a lot more creators out there. So you don't have just a few creators that are dividing up, you know, hundreds of thousands of fans. But even if you only have, you know, even if you only have 20 fans or 50 fans, the feeling that you get when one of them actually contacts you and says, hey, the thing that you created had an impact on me and I enjoyed it. You know, that's a very strong message to send.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate that you're doing this. You said you worked with some other people. I don't know if you want to throw their names out there too, or if they are top secret.
So what I would say is, if you go to the creatorappreciationday.wordpress.com website, there's a category of posts called pledges. And these are the very first people when I sort of expressed the idea to them that sort of got on board, and they've pledged that come the first weekend of March, they're going to be either writing reviews or posting on their blog or sharing with other people or possibly even hosting a show and tell.
Nice.
Where you gather your friends together and sort of say, hey, I want to share this, you know, this short video or this music or play this game with you. And then at the same time, leave some feedback for the creator of that thing. So that's where I would direct people to go.
Okay.
Both to see who's sort of the early followers. And I would say at this point, being the beginning of February, there's still time to be an early follower of Creator Appreciation Day. And I actually quote on one of them, I have a link to a TED video about creating a movement. And it's interesting. I don't know if you've seen this video, but it's got one crazy guy that's out in public, and he is doing this crazy little dance, and everyone's looking at him really strangely. So that person is the leader of this crazy dance. But the bravest person is not the leader who gets out there and does it. It's the first follower. So it's the first person that actually gets up and joins the leader. And that's the key person to any sort of movement or any, you know, any group activity. Because the leader is, you know, the leader is just one crazy person up there. But as soon as they have a follower, then they're not alone. And that's what sort of encourages other people to follow. And then you get to a point where you sort of reach a tipping point where in order to fit in, you now need to join into this movement, because otherwise you'll be left behind. So there's sort of these waves of people. There's the initial leader, there's the first follower, and then there's the fear of missing out people that join in. And then there's the, oh my God, I don't want to be left out. You know, I don't want to be on the other side. You know, that's sort of when you hit mainstream.
And then there's the hipsters who are like, I liked it before it was cool, but now it's garbage.
Yes. It's possibly true that by the time it hits mainstream, the initial followers have now gone off and, you know, found something else and, you know, have been the first to discover it and share it with their friends.
Which isn't all bad either. I mean, we were talking about Nickelback at dinner and how they're universally reviled and still moving more albums than almost anyone else in the world. So,
yes.
You know, that's not so bad for them. It worked out okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of that, and you know, it's sort of the Kenny G effect.
Yeah,
it seems like every creative endeavor, every art form, has something that's somehow universally reviled and yet at the same time tremendously popular.
Yeah,
you can't be universally reviled until you've become popular
enough to be universally known.
Right, exactly, and
yes,
yeah. There's probably some pretty grody comparisons I could make there, but I don't really want to go down that road tonight. One of the things I like about the Creator Appreciation Day, too, is that, you know, one of the two rules, okay, guidelines you mentioned, is that it's not about money. You know, it's great if you can throw some cash at your creator, buy another copy of their whatever, or do their Patreon or whatever. Patreon?
I've heard it said both ways. Nobody knows. It's the internet.
But, you know, it's about expressing appreciation for the thing, not necessarily about buying the thing. So appreciation is a thing, even if you can't buy it. I like that, because sometimes people are out of money and they can't buy it. And you feel, if you feel like the only way you can express that a thing was good is to buy it, that's not ideal. And that was a good, good guideline to have.
Yeah. And there's plenty of, you know, there's plenty of commercial opportunities for creators. But I think one thing that was struck, one thing that struck me, and I was listening to Scott King's Creator Cast, and one of the things that struck me was that the person that he had on was talking about, and Scott were talking about how much it meant to them when they heard back from people that it had enjoyed their work, and it's really sort of getting away from the number of downloads and the number of subscribers that you have, and actually looking at, you know, individual people and seeing how much they appreciate the things that you've created.
Well, you know, and two, I got kind of a weird little story, if I may digress a bit, that kind of dovetails into that. One night, one Christmas, my dad and I got drunk on eggnog, and
that is a high calorie way to get drunk.
We were tipsy, And we discovered over the course of my dad using his wielding his Ancestry.com membership, an ancestor who had been a spy in the Revolutionary War. And we found this article in the New York Times about it, about the guy. And we found the name of the professor who had found this guy and had written about him and whatnot. And so we're like, we should get in touch with that guy and find out if he knows anything more about this ancestor. So I, being the person that I am, I tracked down this professor from, I think he was Penn State's email. And emailed him. It was like, tell me more about this man. I am trashed right now. A bit of artistic license taken with the email, but I can't imagine it was much better than that. But he sends this very friendly, very, very happy email back like, hey, I'm really glad you enjoyed my article. That actually is all I know about this guy because he was a tavern keeper in New York, so not a lot of records about what he did. But, you know, I'm glad you enjoyed it. That kind of thing. And so, like, he seemed pretty happy to have gotten drunken, ridiculous feedback on his article. But it was also just a really cool moment for my dad and I to get in touch with this guy and, you know, get a little bit tiny fragment of a connection.
Yeah.
With the source material. And who knows? You might get a better reaction from somebody you contact. Maybe don't drink heavily first. That might be part of it.
Yeah, I think that there's, you know, every person who's creating something that requires any sort of effort at all, at some point has a moment when they say, oh my God, why am I doing this? And if you're a musician, hopefully that doesn't strike you, you know, while you're on stage performing. But it's something, you know, Would anyone notice if I stopped posting on my blog every day or every month or every week, or if this podcast went away? And it doesn't have to be, it doesn't have to take sort of a catastrophic event for people to, you know, for people to reach out to their creators. I think it really just takes a. It really just takes sort of setting aside some time and deciding that, yes, this is something that's important to me. And this is something that I can do because there's, you know, a how-to guide that'll step me through it. And, you know, even if I don't have anything to say, I can at least say, hey, I listened to your last podcast. I really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to the next one. You know, and even something as simple as that is a message that's worth sending.
I think that's great. I'm looking forward to this. I'm definitely going to do some reviews. I might even bother to learn, now that there's an easy step-by-step manual, how on earth Board Game Geek works, to leave some reviews.
You know, I had to learn how Board Game Geek works in order to play in a Game of Thrones play-by-post on Board Game Geek. And what I learned was, don't play a Game of Thrones play-by-post. It's fun for the first 2 months, but then you're just like, I just wish this game had ended a while back. Like,
that's how I would feel about an in-person Game of Thrones game.
Board Game Geek is confusing.
Yeah. We have a friend who uses it for, like, everything. Like, he does the game exchanges and everything, and I'm like, dude, it took me, like, I'm an IT professional. It took me, like, an hour to figure out how to sign up for an account.
You're talking about Devin, son of Kevin, right?
Right.
Right.
Lord of Moria.
Right. Yeah, it's a weird layout. Maybe we could contact the creator of Board Game Geek and appreciate him, her, it.
Or some
I think
combination.
I think that the guide for Board Game Geek was the one that that I sort of procrastinated on the longest because I knew it would not be straightforward.
I wonder if their thinking is, board game players already have to figure out everyone's rule books. They're going to be good enough to figure out this mess. We don't need to make it any clearer.
Well, people that enjoy board games usually enjoy them for the challenge.
Yeah, that's right.
But that's not necessarily how they approach websites.
I don't know that I've ever thought, this website, I must conquer it. I am driven to overcome this shoddy user interface and confusing layout. It's not happened to me.
Well, Creator Appreciationing Day, that's a new word I just made up. If you would like to appreciate me for the creation of that word I just made up, you could do that on this weekend. It's the first weekend in March, which is the 5th and 6th. I guess the 4th, 5th, and 6th, if you're one of those crazy types who includes Friday in your weekend. You can find it, like we said before, on creatorappreciationday.wordpress.com.
We'll have a link in the show notes, too.
I can, as always, find Chip on Twitter. He is it the underscore flying sheep? I should have pulled it up in front of me. We had this conversation last time.
That's right. It's T-H-E underscore F-L-Y-I-N-G S-H-E-E-P. So the flying sheep. And if you look at the pledges page, then you can see the format of pledging to write reviews or to leave feedback or just to contact the creators of stuff that you love. And if you tag me in that tweet and use the Creator Appreciation Day hashtag, I will add your tweet to the next update of pledges. So you can show everyone else that you're one of these early adopters, early followers, hipsters, or whatever you'd like to call it.
And if you want to find Chip elsewhere, he's also at flyingsheep.com. And if you want to hear about his game that came out recently, we interviewed him a little while ago. You can find episode 25, the Chip episode of the Mildly Alarming Podcast.
Is that really 20 episodes ago?
I know. 21, right? This is 46.
Wow. Yeah, you're right.
Or 12.3.
It feels like only yesterday.
Is there anything else you wanted to plug?
No, I think that pretty much covers it.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show again.
For being
it was
here,
a pleasure
Chip.
To have you.
Thank you for having me. And I will be happy to come back anytime I can find the door unlocked or, or I can pick the lock or I can knock the door down. I'll be happy to come back and chat with you guys again.
Any of those things. It's a shed made of balsa wood. You could probably just walk through a wall.
I told you should have used pure mahogany.
I can't afford anything but balsa wood. If you would like to donate money to us so we can build our shed out of something other than balsa wood, you could find us and we can tell you how to sound this money on Twitter at Mildly Alarming.
You could send us an email at mildlyalarmingshow@gmail.com.
Or you could leave a comment on the website in the comment section of that website at www.mildlyalarming.com.
Or if you're kind of wondering who to appreciate for Creator Appreciation Day, just sit down in the middle of your living room floor and think to yourself, am I not creating my life moment by moment? And thus, should I not appreciate myself as a creator? And then we'll appear and slap you with a halibut.
And you'll be struck by lightning for sitting on your bedroom floor. We'll be right back after this word from our sponsors. And now, a special message from the Nebulon Ambassador to Earth, Valitar Krambuthax. His name be golden and damp.
Greetings, Earthlings. I come before you today via your podcast of gentle fear with a request from the Great Council of the Nebulons, their names be moistened and green. It is the wish of our people that you cease blaming your cattle mutilations upon us. We have never mutilated cattle. In fact, due to the way that our perceptions are structured, we were unaware until recently that cattle and garbage fire were different things. We have learned, however, that they are, and our finest scienticians have confirmed beyond a shadow of a doubt that you can mutilate the one, but not the other, except in a metaphorical sense. But to avoid digressing further, we the Nebulons wish it to be clear and known that we do not mutilate cattle, have never mutilated cattle, and will not mutilate cattle in the future. Indeed, we have studied the matter and discovered that your cattle mutilations are the work of one Earthling named Carl. He is tiny and hairless. We thank your masters, the hosts of the Softish Terror podcast, for granting us the boon of time to speak to you all. May your names be Lavender and Soggy. Nebulons, away!
Recently, Johannes and I argued for literally hours about whether or not the accents we chose to use in the following mildly alarming theater were acceptable. So, f*** it. You decide.
Ugh, 3 a.m. and I have to get up to pee. Shouldn't have drank all that boar milk. Sweet flying octopus, what the hell are you?
Oh, hello. Sorry, I didn't realize you were going to wake up.
Why are you in my bedroom? Wait, hang on. Creepy robe, giant scythe, skull for oh no, am I dead?
What? Oh no, of course not. You're totally alive. Dead people don't pee. Well, they do, sometimes, one last time. But you are definitely 100% not dead.
But you're clearly the Grim Reaper. Also, could you hand me that towel?
The one with the little princesses on it?
Yeah.
Sure. Anyway, I'm not the Grim Reaper. I'm a Grim Reaper. I'm Steve.
The Grim Reaper's name is Steve?
Well, the boss goes by Lawrence, but his real name is a bleak rune carved on the Stone of Finality, around which time swirls. It is unpronounceable by human mouth and drives men to madness when heard. So, Lawrence.
Wait, the boss? So there's more than one of you.
Come on, Kevin. Mop up that pee puddle and pay attention. I just told you that I'm a Grim Reaper, not the Grim Reaper. The article indicates non-specificity.
Right, right. So, is your real name a scary rune on a rock somewhere, too?
Nah, that's just for the boss. The rest of us just pick our own. A lot of guys go with flowery stuff like Terror of the Night and Scramthrachulix. But I just thought something simple would be nice. You know, easy to say, easy to remember.
Sure, sure. But even though you're just one of many Grimm's Reaper? You still, what, harvest the souls of the dying or whatever?
Oh, absolutely. Take a swing of my scythe and pop! Your soul and your body are two things.
But you said I'm not dead. So what are you doing here?
Oh, right. I guess that would be unclear. Sorry, sometimes I forget how scary I look. See, I'm in sort of a probationary period right now. I've reaped a couple of souls, but I always work with a full Grim Reaper around to help, you know? So, to make it to full Reaper, I need to watch a few people sleep.
Pardon? Watch what now? To the what?
Yeah, just, you know, sneak into your house, stand in a corner, and watch you sleep. No harm, no foul, right?
I think there's most definitely a foul there.
Well, I don't make the rules. Take it up with the boss.
Right, so will tonight count, since I woke up?
Nah, but it's no biggie. I got a 2-for-1 last week with a couple in London. Did you know English people sleep in giant rabbit costumes?
Really? I had no idea.
Well, I guess I can't prove that all of them do.
Huh. Hey, I guess I probably won't have too many opportunities to meet a Grim Reaper and live to tell the tale.
Probably not, no.
Mind if I ask a question or two?
Shoot.
What's the robe made out of?
The darkness between stars on a moonless night.
Where do you source your scythes?
Each one is forged over 100 years by Balcryctothrax, the cripplesmith, who is chained to his workshop for all eternity in the bowels of Scraggathoon and guarded by a pack of rabid fear hounds.
Seems like it's not too great for that guy.
He's not thrilled.
But what if one breaks? Do you have to go a century scytheless?
Well, in a pinch, we just pop down to Home Depot. Speaking of which, I should probably be getting back. It is my turn to slap a layer of wax on the Stone of Finality. Got to stop by for a fresh can. Last question, then.
Aside from reaping souls and, like, teleporting, or however you get from place to place, do you have any cool powers?
I can do this! Oh, I forgot that converting my face into a vision of the Underhell breaks human brains. Lawrence is not going to be happy about that one. Oh well.
Hey guys, my name's not important, but I own Danger Coffee. The hottest new coffee shop in town, and I want to tell you all about it so you'll come down for our grand opening. You know how you drink coffee to wake up in the morning? Gotta get that caffeine buzz, am I right? Well, at Danger Coffee, we crank it up past 11, past 12, even past 13 and 14. That's right, we twist the dial all the way around to 15. How do we do it? By spiking one in every 100 cups of coffee with a heady mix of whatever uppers I can get from my supplier, Scary Larry. Are you going to get the regular cup of coffee you asked for? Maybe put a little milk and sugar in there? Or are you going to get a rocket straight to the moon and emerge 2 days later, naked in an Iowa cornfield, with vague memories of government conspiracy in a gorilla costume? There's no earthly way to know, and that's what makes Danger Coffee so good. You'll get a sharp rush of adrenaline just from wondering if you're about to drink coffee or the distilled blood of an 80s stockbroker. That alone will get you the energy you need to make it through your morning meetings. So come on down to Danger Coffee. Grand opening, where all the coffee is half off, and one lucky opening day customer will get a cup of pure gasoline.